You're listening to Maine Public's Political Pulse. I'm Ari Snyder, joined by Maine Public's chief political correspondent Steve Missler and State House correspondent Kevin Miller. Let's start with one of President Trump's most drastic and controversial actions, an attempt to freeze all federal grants and loans approved by Congress. The White House eventually walked back that effort, but Kevin, how would shutting off federal funding impact Maine?
Yeah, well, it would have a potentially enormous impact, depending on how it's implemented. But the problem was the Trump administration did a really bad job explaining how it would be done. And that's where the confusion bordering on chaos, that's where it all stemmed from in Maine and across the country. The White House had said that this spending freeze wouldn't apply to Medicaid and food stamps and housing assistance, but it did initially. And the Maine Department of Health and Human Services, along with other state programs around the country, they temporarily lost access to the federal portal that they used to draw down federal Medicaid funds. The same goes for Maine housing and public housing authorities. And then there was just this uncertainty about the funding status in so many other programs like Meals on Wheels and Easter Seals and these community action agencies that give out heating assistance and do elder care programs. It sounds like they've all regained access to that funding within a day or so. But as we know, Maine is an older state with high levels of poverty in some areas. So any changes to Medicaid, Meals on Wheels, LIHEAP, those are all critical support systems. So they were really concerned. And I'll just add here that while the Trump administration rescinded the memo, they made very clear that they fully intend to still freeze or cut funding to many other programs on things like renewable energy or foreign aid or diversity, equity, and inclusion or DEI. But hopefully they'll do a better job next time explaining in more intricate detail which programs are affected and which aren't.
And how did Democrats both in Maine and in other states react to this move?
Yeah, it's really interesting, Ari, because pretty much since the election, there's been this sense that Democrats are reeling, disorganized, and not entirely sure how to combat Trump 2.0. You know, there's been some that argued that Dems can't fight every extreme move like they did during his first term because they'll basically punch themselves out and the public will tune them out. At the same time, the sheer blitz of Trump's moves has been pretty alarming to activists. And they're just sort of like, where are the Democrats? Well, this funding freeze gambit was the first time I've seen the party jump out with swift, unified, and arguably effective condemnation. It was sort of this clarion call, and it just happens to be the preferred tack of the Maine Democratic Party's new chairman, Charlie Dingman, who was just recently won election. When I talked to him this week, he said it was impossible to chart a new course for the party without highlighting the program that the Trump administration was unleashing on the American people. And this funding freeze was a perfect example because of all the uncertainty, worry, and as Kevin mentioned, the chaos that ensued.
Because all that really matters for that administration is supporting the desire of the wealthiest people in the world to have even more for themselves and to distract the rest of us by persuading us that we're different from each other and should be fighting with each other.
And Ari, I think you're going to hear more criticism of Trump's kitchen cabinet of billionaires from Democrats. It fits pretty neatly in their long crusade about taxing the rich and how the economic system is tilted towards those who already have wealth and abundance.
And I'll just add here that 8 years ago after Trump was elected, we just saw this massive response of protests all over the country. We didn't see any of that this year. So it seems like for the past couple of months, Democrats have just been reeling. Some say they've been in hiding. Some say they've been kind of trying to gauge whether they're going to do an all-out blitz on the Trump administration. And like Steve said, this just gave them an opening to really ramp up that campaign. The question is, are they going to keep that sustained or are they going to be more strategic in how they respond in the future?
Yeah. And to your point, Kevin, I think the other, you know, what we've heard in some corners of the Democratic Party is to not do that, not respond to every single thing and to sort of have this sort of a la carte approach to how they oppose the president and these actions that he's taking. But I think that's particularly unsatisfying to a lot of the Democratic base and certainly activists. They want to oppose these measures because they care a lot about the policies that could be affected and obviously the people as well. So it'll be interesting to see if they carry forward with this sort of unanimity in opposing the Trump administration or if it's back to kind of picking their spots.
So Congress, of course, controls the so-called power of the purse. Under current law, presidents are obligated to spend money as Congress directs most of the time. But the Trump administration is challenging that long-accepted arrangement. So, Kevin, what might happen next in that fight, and how does Maine Senator Susan Collins factor into it?
Right. So that big dust-up that we just talked about over Trump's short-lived attempt to freeze federal funding, that's in all likelihood just the first skirmish in a much bigger battle over who controls federal spending, Congress or the White House. Most of the decisions about federal dollars actually come from the House and Senate Appropriations Committees. After 15 years of serving on the Senate Appropriations Committee, Senator Collins became the chairwoman of the panel this year. And that's a big deal for Collins, and she would argue for Maine, because those two appropriations chair positions are two of the most important and powerful jobs in Congress, because they have significant influence over how this massive federal budget is divvied up. So kind of re-enter Trump in this whole situation. He's not a fan of the idea that the president basically has to live with and implement all these spending decisions that come from Congress. And he's made very clear that he intends to challenge that congressional authority. Now, I'm going to use a word that's pretty wonky, kind of a DC buzzword here, but people may start hearing it. It's called impoundment. That's when the president or the executive branch basically cancels or withholds or reduces the amount of funding that Congress has approved. Trump intends to challenge a 1974 law that really made it harder for presidents to ignore the will of Congress on spending. And as chairwoman of the Senate Appropriations Committee, Collins will undoubtedly have an interest in this fight, I'd say.
I'll just add that Collins's position on the Appropriations Committee was a key selling point of her 2020 re-election campaign. And she's continued to highlight it ever since ascending to the top spot on the committee that Kevin just mentioned. But that position will arguably be less beneficial to Maine and politically to Collins if Trump is successful in this fight over who controls the purse strings. It'll be harder to claim credit for diverting funds to Maine if the Trump administration just ends up intercepting them and using them for a different purpose. And I think, you know, that's the real tension here between Collins and this move by the Trump administration to hand over more of this spending discretion to the executive branch.
So pulling our focus back down to the state level for a minute, gun control efforts are once again top of mind in Augusta and causing some sharp divisions there. Steve, what's going on?
So recently, Ari, gun control activists held this event in Augusta to showcase this effort to get a red flag bill on the November ballot. Now, we've done a lot of reporting on this in the Breakdown Project, but for those who are unfamiliar, this prospective referendum is viewed by Governor Janet Mills as a real threat to this yellow flag law that she drafted alongside a prominent gun rights group 6 years ago. Now, both the red flag and the yellow flag proposals or laws are what's known as extreme risk protection orders, which are basically designed to take guns from dangerous people. The governor's yellow flag bill really prioritizes gun owners' rights in this confiscation process, whereas the red flag proposal that activists introduced recently is more streamlined and allows family members to directly petition a judge to remove someone's guns. It has fewer steps, and that's what gun control activists want. But Mills, who once supported a red flag proposal, has mounted an all-out defense of her yellow flag law and even brought it up during her budget address this week.
The law provides due process, and it will survive legal scrutiny. And I don't believe a private citizen should have to navigate what can be a complex and confusing court procedure by themselves, especially when they're in the middle of already difficult circumstances. I believe it's the government's responsibility, not that of a private citizen, to protect the public from gun violence.
I think it was noteworthy, Ari, that the governor used this statewide address to criticize the red flag referendum, and it certainly raises questions about whether she'll be more involved in campaigning against it, should it qualify for the November ballot.
And that was Maine Public's chief political correspondent Steve Missler and State House correspondent Kevin Miller. Thanks for joining us for Maine Public's Political Pulse. You can also read the Political Pulse newsletter. Find it online at mainepublic.org/pulse. Our music is by Rob Holt. I'm Ari Snyder. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again soon on Maine's Political Pulse.